Welcome to the Monocle Arts Review, where we're talking TV. I'm Ben Ryland, and on our show today, we have The Private Lives of the Monarchy, a rivalry in the Vatican, and the latest in David Attenborough's beautiful and fascinating nature documentaries. Joining me on the program is arts and entertainment writer for The Telegraph, Alice Vinson. Alice, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Now, we're going to begin with The Crown, which, of course, is a new period drama that hit Netflix last week. It's a 10-part series that delves into the private life of Queen Elizabeth II from the 1940s until modern times. The show sees Claire Foy take up the lead role with Matt Smith as Prince Philip, and it's said to be the most expensive television program ever made. Alice, why so pricey? And in your opinion, do you think it was all worth it?
I think, why so pricey? Because Netflix can.
I love that answer.
And they know that how many headlines are going to be generated. You know, they've really whipped the carpet out from under the BBC's feet here. You know, this is prime BBC territory. This American company from California are coming in and saying, we've got loads of money and we're going to make a really beautiful show about your monarchy. And that's exactly what they've done.
And I have to say that, look, BBC historical dramas, lovely. But this one seems to have a little bit less of a stiff upper lip, to put it politely.
Yeah, I mean, the C word emerges like 5 minutes into the show, which would certainly never happen in BBC. I think that's why it works. We were just sort of chatting about how compelling it was. And I am really surprised by how taken in I am by The Crown, actually. And maybe some of that money hasn't just gone on the really beautiful cinematography and the incredible costumes and the fact it looks so beautiful, but more on the fact that they've got, you know, Peter Morgan at the helm, and he did The Audience and also The Queen. So he's kind of the king of writing about the Queen for screen.
And we've also got Stephen Daldry on board with this as well, who, of course, has directed many films that have been beautiful to watch as well, The Hours being probably one of the more high-profile ones. He directs a lot of theatre, especially here in London. His version of An Inspector Calls is hitting stages at
Right now.
So we've got quite a bit of talent behind what's happening here. But as you just suggested there, the visuals are really what stand out, maybe at first.
Yes.
That moniker of cinematic television has been thrown around a fair bit, especially when describing things like Mad Men, like Game of Thrones and so on. This definitely fits the bill, doesn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, I think what's so curious about watching The Crown is that you look at it and it is kind of gorgeous and sumptuous, but it almost looks like you're watching something maybe from the Victorian era or something. It's got that kind of, you know, sepia tone, hazy glory about it. You kind of forget that this was history that was happening 60 years ago. It's they've just done a really good job.
Well, I was really, something that really stood out to me initially was how much Claire Foy sounds like the Queen. She's clearly learned that way of speaking.
The received pronunciation.
It's not
she's
just
nailed
the Queen's
it.
English. It's actually the Queen's voice, isn't it?
Yeah.
Let's hear a little bit of a clip, actually.
Don't you get sick of it all? And lonely?
I do. Which is why it's so important to have the right person by your side.
You understand, the titles, they're not the job. She is the job.
Loving her, protecting her, she is the essence of your duty.
So I was watching this with a group of friends. We had a bit of a viewing party, actually, for the first episode.
And did you wear crowns?
We didn't wear crowns, unfortunately. But we tried to speak very properly all the way through.
Okay.
And now one of the things that I was thinking about was, I wonder how it would be for the royal family to actually be watching this.
You know, I can't believe anyone was watching The Crown and not thinking that. Like, I was just imagining the Queen in like a cosy dressing gown sitting back.
You know? There's just so little that we can possibly know about what happened inside these walls. That so much of this has to be a little bit gossipy. I mean, it is quite gossipy, isn't it? I mean, with the Queen confronting her sister about potentially having an affair.
But we don't know
how that confrontation might have happened.
No, but you know what? There are the letters. There is a lot of documentation to show the inner workings of the palace. You know, we don't know how those conversations went, but a lot of this has been backed up. It is factual. I think what works with it is that it is about the personal side of having that huge responsibility, which frankly none of them really want, and that's what makes it work so well.
Well, Alice Vincent, of course, is from a British newspaper, so perhaps she does know more than most about what happens behind the walls of Buckingham Palace. Just very quickly on this, though, it has been compared a little bit to another royal series, Victoria. That one was dubbed fairly trashy.
Yeah.
How does this one match up?
This one is infinitely better.
That is fantastic to know. That's The Crown, available now on Netflix. I challenge you not to watch the whole thing in one big sitting. Now, from the British sovereign to the leader of the Catholic Church, quite a seg, we move on to HBO's latest drama, The Young Pope. Now, this sees, hilariously, Jude Law take up the title role, much to the dismay of others within the Vatican. Let's hear a clip.
You're just a blue-eyed kid. I was supposed to be Pope.
Il potere conoscenza. I know how to get him to resign.
You want to make the world pay for the wrong it did you? You'll be a terrible Pope. The worst.
I'm ready to wage a war without end against you.
They chose a Pope they didn't know. And today, they began to understand.
That sounds very strange. It sounds like the Godfather inside the Vatican. It all sounds very, very odd to me. But then I read that it's actually directed by Paolo Sorrentino, who, of course, is a fantastic film director. Am I judging this a little too harshly?
I think everyone's judged it a little too harshly, actually. I liked how you were like trying not to laugh when you said that Jude Law played the Pope. he smashes it, you
Does
know.
He actually
really smashes it. I think it's something that's going to take him out of these slightly dodgy movie credits he's had over the last few years and cement him as someone a bit serious again.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, so it is actually, it's HBO's latest drama. So, I mean, that suggests its quality. Paolo Sorrentino, good director to have on board. So it falls off a little bit with Jude Law as the Pope, but you're saying he absolutely smashes it. Are there any other feathers that it can put in its cap?
Well, Diane Keaton is brilliant. She plays the weird nun mother that raised Jude Law, the Pope.
Why are you struggling not to laugh when you describe this?
Because I'm just picturing her character wearing this T-shirt that says, "I'm a virgin, but this T-shirt's old." I mean, this is the kind of... That's what she wears in the show. It's absolutely, completely threaded through with Sorrentino's humour. The opening scene, we see, like... I mean, I'm just going to keep calling him Jude Law the Pope, even though that's not his character name. But we see him crawl through this mass of babies in this weird dream sequence. It's so surreal. It's so darkly funny. I mean, if you were one of those people who watched and fell in love with The Grand Beauty, but also laughed at its complete, sometimes utter banality and bizarreness, you will love The Young Pope.
Can you, because this isn't exactly what you'd describe as a historical epic. It's a little bit...
Right.
Different to that. Can you describe exactly what's going on the screen?
Okay, so it's sort of fictionalized. A few years ago, Sorrentino had this vision that came to him, almost religiously, of the Pope going down a ski slope in like ski gear. And I think that's where the idea started. And so what this is that basically completely fictional kind of Vatican situation. Jude Law the Pope has been brought in. He's an American cardinal and he's been elected way above his station. And the motivations for this don't become immediately clear. It's not sure whether the Vatican wants a bit of a PR boost or they want to make it a bit sexier. But you're in this situation where you have this young, enigmatic, God-fearing enigma in walking into the Vatican demanding a cherry Coke for breakfast. It's completely surreal.
Wow, that would almost be enough to make me move to the Vatican, cherry Coke for breakfast. Okay, so... But as a nice, nourishing televisual meal, does this pull it off? I mean, it's got some stiff competition, especially with HBO. Game of Thrones is finished.
Right.
Westworld is making headlines everywhere as the answer to that void. Is this going to be another thing that they can put on their must-see list?
It'll be on the must-see list, but if you're talking about it in food analogies, it's definitely like nouveau cuisine. It's, you know... It's going to somewhere fancy to eat a tiny amount of food on a plate. It's an artistic experience. It's not something you slob out in front of the TV. You know, there's a lot of Italian conversation going on. It's House of Cardinals, basically. There's a lot of...
That's perfect. That is The Young Pope showing on HBO and Sky Atlantic right now. And we'll end today's show with something a little more wholesome. Last weekend saw the first episode of Planet Earth 2. which aired on the BBC, the latest nature documentary series by everyone's favourite naturalist, David Attenborough. This is a follow-up to the highly successful Planet Earth series a decade ago. At the time, the most expensive nature doc to be made, and the first to be filmed in HD, which looked at a different habitat each week all around the globe. Now, Alice, where did the first episode of the new series take us? We should specify that by Planet Earth 2, they mean it's a sequel, not a new version of Earth.
Yeah, Attenborough's good, but he's not developed a new planet for us to live on, has he? We actually hop around all over the place. It's sort of, we go from a Pacific island, we go to a volcano, go to some jungles. It's different from Planet Earth in which it's just like, we're just looking at deserts today. Like, we see all the different environments.
Some people, well, I mean, with David Attenborough, it's a little bit hard to believe, but some people might still hear the term nature documentary and just think, ugh.
Right.
The way that he shoots this, though, is quite ingenious, isn't it? It's really about looking at things that we might consider just, you know, part of everyday life or just part of the world, but in a slightly, in a completely new way.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's sort of what he captures so perfectly. I mean, these are environments that a lot of people didn't even know existed. We're talking about like the most remote volcano in the world. So it's not like some of his series where he's like, we're in, you know, a shantytown in India and these are some monkeys. Like, he will get onto that, I'm sure, but not in this episode. But he does manage to bring these completely bizarre phenomenon to a kind of wonderfully domestic level. You know, it's the two penguins who are trying to feed their kids, or, you know, it's the baby hatchlings who are trying to get away from the snakes. There's such a sort of universal humanity in his presenting that you can't help but sort of get vaguely involved with it.
And why do you think that it makes you feel involved? Because, I mean, after a while, you would have to think that, you know, watching these two penguins waddle around, it would just get a little bit old. But somehow he keeps the pace moving. He keeps you involved in something that is so foreign to our existence. Mm. How does he do it?
I think it's just, you know, it's fascinating for one thing. You are seeing things that you had no idea existed. I mean, some of the animals that you're being shown, even as like people who vaguely engaged with stuff, you just won't have seen before. But I mean, David Attenborough, he's in the UK, he's upheld as a national treasure for a reason. His narration is genuinely brilliant. It's storytelling. It's pure storytelling.
That famous narration indeed. Well, before we go, let's have a clip from episode one. Here we meet a sloth swimming between islands to find a calling mate.
But she's not the one. She already has a baby, and she won't mate again until it leaves her in about 6 months' time. Even life on a paradise island can have its limitations. But at least she can't be far away.
So, lovely to hear that little sloth there. So just before we go, Alice, I understand that technology has improved quite a bit since we saw the first series. Does that really shine through with this one?
Yeah, I mean, if you've got one of those fancy tellies, that you're going to really benefit from this. It's if a Planet Earth 1, as you were saying, they really want to be the first people to shoot in high definition, and this is just taking it to the next level. There's a section at the end of the show when they show how they filmed stuff, which I always find a bit dry, to be honest. I'd rather watch more animals. But if you are like a massive tech nerd and you're into your film stuff and your cinematography, then it's definitely worth watching. Like, the like lengths these people go to film this nature is remarkable.
Well, viewing party at Alice Vincent's house for sure. That's Planet Earth 2. It airs every Sunday on BBC One and will surely be released on DVD once it's aired for all listeners elsewhere in the world. And that brings us to the end of today's show. Thanks to my guest, Alice Vincent. You have been listening to The Monocle Arts Review with me, Ben Rylan. The show is produced by Holly Fisher. Join us again at the same time tomorrow. We'll be joined by Charmaine Lovegrove for our weekly literary chat. But for now, goodbye from me. Thanks for listening.